Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Washington, D.C. Longtime listeners of the Inside Scoop will remember a show I did about 10 years ago. I also wrote an article for it on Alternet that's still around somewhere on the internet. And it was about how the FBI had squelched an investigation into an alliance between Islamic terrorist groups and white supremacist domestic terrorist groups. And the focus at the time was mostly on the FBI and problems it had within the FBI. Today I want to focus on why it is that Islamic terrorists and white supremacists would ever work together. And what is the difference between domestic terrorism and foreign terrorism? Here's a hint. There's less difference than you might think. For one thing, 10 years ago, the white supremacist and the Islamic terrorist got together. These are two real people, by the way. There was an FBI agent who was a third, an informant, who got to the table and recorded their communication. But they agreed strongly on one thing. They both really, really hate Jews. They agreed that Hitler was a great man, and they wanted to talk about ways that they could work together to attack Jewish targets all across the United States. And I remember at the time thinking, that's unusual. There'd be people that think, why would right-wing white supremacist neo-Nazis work with, you know, Islamic extremists? Don't they hate each other? Well, they did find common ground. And at a time when, let's face it, the Republicans brutally attacked President Obama for not calling out terrorism that had a basis in a perversion of Islam. I don't think it's what Islam is about, but I do think, let's face it, there are certain branches of Islam, certain perversions of Islam that do preach violence, that do preach terror, and are the source of terrorism worldwide. It's some on my left. I argue with about this, but I actually think most scholars would agree it's a perversion of Islam, but it does come out of, for example, Saudi Arabia, which preaches this Wahhabi terrorism. And people on the right excoriated folks like, well, progressives like President Obama, like me. I had a conversation with Bill O'Reilly, somewhere you can find that on the internet as well, where I said, you know, don't call it Islamic extremism, call it radical Islamic extremism. I mean, make clear that this is not all Muslims. There's at least a billion peaceful Muslims. And he said, well, you have to label it. So I think it's time we label what happened last week. It's not just the synagogue massacre in Pittsburgh, where 11 elderly Jewish parishioners on a peaceful Shabbat morning were doing what they always do, pray quietly, including a 97-year-old woman massacred by a man who shouted that all the Jews must die, wielding an AR-15, a weapon of war created. It's antecedent created by the Nazis. Nice little closure there. Nazi weapon being used to kill Jews. It's not just the Pittsburgh 11. It's also the Kentucky 2. Murdered also last week, a few days before the Pittsburgh massacre, by a man who was determined to get into a black church and do to the black church exactly what the Pittsburgh man did to the synagogue. Couldn't get in. Went to a nearby grocery store and murdered two black people, dead in cold blood. And when a white man, I assume a police officer, was trying to protect them and shooting back at them. He said, wait, wait, whites don't kill whites, said this white supremacist. And in between the event on Wednesday and the event on Saturday, of course, were the 14, 15 bombs, I've lost count, sent to President Obama, former president. Someone sent a bomb to a former president, and it's not the lead story. And to the vice president, Joe Biden, and to the nominee, the Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, and to Senator Cory Booker, Senator Kamala Harris, critics of Donald Trump, sent to George Soros. We're going to get back to George Soros. George Soros, a Holocaust survivor, an immigrant from Hungary, a Jewish man in his late 80s who is wealthy and funds liberals, not quite to the extent, but getting up there on the scale of the way the Koch brothers fund conservatives. Attacked by a man who lives in a van, covered with Trump stickers, Pence stickers. This is a man who attended rally after rally of Donald Trump, complete with a CNN sucks sticker in the bottom left corner and vicious posters of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. You won't find a greater Trump fan than the bomber who sent bombs to Democrats. And of course, on Fox News, first they said that the bomber, it was a false flag operation. The man who sent these bombs to all these Democrats must be a Democrat who's trying to convince people that Republicans are dangerous until, well, the guy lives in a Trump van and attended Trump rallies. All the while, Fox and Breitbart and right-wing news sources are talking about the caravan. The caravan! Oh my God! There's 7,000 Hondurans and Guatemalans who are so poor they can't even afford a bus ride across Mexico and so are walking 1,500 miles, men, women, and children, mostly women and children. By the time they get to the United States, how many will be left? 1,000? 2,000? I don't know. But I know this. In 1980, America took 130,000 people from the Mariel boat lift from Cuba. You hear me, Marco Rubio? You hear me, Ted Cruz? Both of Cuban heritage, because Cubans, once they reach American soil, immediately become legal. They don't have to wait in line. They don't have to worry about being undocumented. You can't be undocumented if you're Cuban. You arrive on American soil, bingo, you become a citizen. Now, there were some complaints in 1980 about the hordes of poor Cubans coming to the American shore. A few, mostly by the right wing, by people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, except for the fact that they have their own Cuban heritage. Hey, you can go back to Vietnam. I think there were 175,000 that we took. Something like that. It was well over 100,000. In 1 year, following the fall of Saigon. And what happened to those poor, destitute Vietnamese people, the boat people, who came clinging on anything they could to get to the United States? Those poor refuge, those huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Did they take all our welfare money? Did they take our jobs? Actually, the Vietnamese community, in the course of a generation, is doing better than the white people. They have a higher median income. They have more small businesses. They have, on average, higher education. Not only are they not taking our welfare money, they are contributing to our tax base, to our business, to our economy, to our GDP. They're hiring. Isn't that always the case with immigrants? Right? Generation before the Vietnamese boat people, there were Jewish boat people, Holocaust survivors, came in the 1930s, including a boatload of children from Germany, landed on America's shores, were refused entry, were sent back to Germany, where a heck of a lot of them got gassed for being Jewish. My family, my relatives, my great-grandparents came at the turn of the century, between the late 1880s and the early 1900s. The last came in 1906. My great-grandfather had $20 total net worth. Not 20 bucks in his pocket. The total value of all of his belongings, clothing, the samovar they brought over from Russia, which my parents still have. Their total net worth in 1906 was 20 bucks. And yeah, there's been inflation. Maybe it's $2,000 today, but it ain't much because in Ellis Island, if you had $50 or more, you got a big check mark. But I've seen the manifest from my great-grandfather who came on the SS Finland in steerage class. He didn't have $50. He had $20. And they watched carefully people like that who they feared would might become a public charge. My great-grandfather went door to door selling women's dresses that he sewed. Did well as a door-to-door peddler. By the time he died, he had a store of his own in New Orleans. My grandfather actually did even better. Went to Tulane Medical School back in the 1920s when there was a quota on how many Jews could go to Tulane Medical School. But he got in, despite the quota. When I say a quota, I mean a cap, not a floor. He got in, unfortunately had to leave medical school because his father died. He had to take over his father's women's clothing business and expanded to 6 stores throughout New Orleans and southern Mississippi. My grandfather always allowed blacks in his stores. He was a businessman. His clothing was cheap. It was inexpensive. One could argue he did it just for his business, or one could argue that my grandfather didn't see a distinction between black and white. He did well. He had a successful business. I think I told you he had 6 stores, and by the time his son, my uncle, went through college, he could finish medical school. He's currently an ophthalmologist in Nashville, Tennessee. As for me, I grew up well. I grew up upper middle class. My dad's a lawyer. I got into the same schools that Brett Kavanaugh went to. I went to Harvard College and Yale Law School. I don't talk about that often. Didn't do it based on my parents the way Kavanaugh did. I wasn't a legacy. No affirmative action for rich white people for me. I got in because I had really good grades because I studied hard. Was near the top of my class. Sorry, not meaning to brag. I'm just telling you that 3 generations away from my great-grandfather who arrived penniless, I think we've done okay. I, of course, now serve in the Virginia state government as a state representative. I should note that my great-grandfather didn't even have the money to afford his steerage class ship. The story I'm told is that when he was in his shtetl, his little Jewish village, the Russians at the time made the Jews live in separate villages, in his shtetl, Yiddish word, the Cossacks came. They came on their horseback, shooting at the Jews. They'd go into the marketplace and just shoot wildly at the Jews. Target practice, as it were. My grandfather, I'm told, laid in the mud, pretended to be dead. Smart choice. And the Cossack stepped on him. Footprint on his back to make sure he was dead as he lay still. Holding his breath in the mud. When he came home that day, he told his wife, my great-grandmother, that he wished he could go to America, but he didn't have the money to do it. She told him she had the money. How did she have the money? Women didn't work. She had the money because she'd saved a little bit from all he gave her for grocery shopping and things like that, and stuck it under the mattress. And her thriftiness and wisdom was what let them afford their steerage class ticket to America. That's my family story. I'm sure you have one as well. Whether your family came from immigrants or slaves, or a few of you from Native Americans, we all have our story. Trying to fear immigrants is like trying to fear Americans. They are we. We are they. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. In an unreasonable world. Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Talked about my family history as an immigrant. Not so much because it's unique or different from any of yours, but precisely because my guess is most of us have the same history. Maybe your families escaped the famine in Ireland in the 1840s. Maybe they came after World War II with all those refugees. Maybe your family was brought here on slave ships. But 97, 98% of Americans come from somewhere else. I've long argued that the only people who have a right to complain about immigration are the Native Americans. How ironic, then, that the caravan is mostly descendants of the indigenous peoples who populated the Americas before the white man and the black man came. The indigenous peoples, the Native Americans, who'd been, some call them the Indians, because Chris Columbus couldn't get his continent straight. But the Native Americans had, of course, been here for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years, before white men ever came, and inhabited all of America, from North America to South America. And in North America, the white folks largely wiped out the Native Americans, some intermarriage, but mostly just killed them through war or smallpox. In South America, in Central America, the Spanish largely merged with the population. And so the population of Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras, well, they're more indigenous than I am, or probably than you are, you who's listening to me, certainly if you're white or black. In some ways, they're more American than we are. Should we not give them the same opportunity that we had? Whatever you think about America's immigration policy, we do know this. They're not a bunch of terrorists. They're not a bunch of people who hate America. These are people who love the United States so much that they're coming here to make a better life. No, the terrorists, the danger to America doesn't come from the caravan. It comes from white nationalists who are incited to their hatred by none other than the President of the United States. How does he do it? Why does he do it? How much is he responsible? We'll get to those questions after the break. Call in 888-488-MARK.
Back to the Oppressive Progressive.
Welcome back to the Inside. So the president, taking a cue off of Fox News, is complaining that the impoverished Central American immigrants who are escaping dramatic violence in Honduras and Guatemala by walking to the United States are some horde that includes some Middle Easterners, although no one's able to find any of them. They asked the president, what's your basis for this? And he said, well, it could be. Well, it could be. It could be that they're all albinos without arms and legs hidden in the group. Maybe. A horde invading the country. Fox News claimed that George Soros, Holocaust survivor, financier, international Jew, was financing the caravan. There's no evidence of that. And meanwhile, the president said, you know what? Screw the Constitution. I don't have to obey that stupid Constitution that I took an oath to uphold. The Constitution says if you're born in America, you're an American. Screw that. I don't want that to happen. And not only do I not want it to happen, I don't even want to do it through constitutional amendment, which is how you change constitutional things. Now, the 14th Amendment, which was written to overturn the Dred Scott decision that said that blacks, Africans, could not ever have civil rights in America, whether they were free or enslaved, that 14th Amendment, that we fought a bloody war and more Americans died than all other wars put together, that one, he's just going to change it by executive order. Screw the Civil War. No one cares about the Civil War. No one cares about blacks. No one cares about slavery. The President of the United States is just going to say, hey, I don't give a damn about the American Constitution. Meanwhile, he's calling the press the enemy of the people. Doesn't care about the First Amendment too much either. Be afraid. Be very, very afraid. And his words are being listened to. Cesar Sayoc, who sent the bombs, lived out of the Trump van, clearly was doing it to help his president. And the killer at the Pittsburgh synagogue massacre cited HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, as helping these immigrants. For those of you who don't know, HIAS is the oldest refugee resettlement organization in the country. It's private. It's Jewish. 100 years ago, they helped my great-grandparents settle. At the time, 125, 130 years ago, they helped refugees because the refugees were Jews. Now HIAS helps all refugees because HIAS is made of Jews. It's part of our Jewish values to help immigrants. All you have to do is study, I don't know, Abraham, who welcomed strangers into his tent. They turned out to be angels. He washed their feet. He gave them a good meal. And lo and behold, the angels told him that because of his kindness to strangers, he would be the father of the Jewish people. That's part of our heritage. And to be fair, it's the one thing that white supremacists and neo-Nazis understand about the Jewish people. They're really angry that Jews believe in welcoming the stranger. Jews have been blamed for everything from race mixing. That's right, Jews donated to the NAACP and marched in the civil rights movement. I confess, it's true. Even my aunt did. My mom's sister in the 1960s registered blacks in Mississippi. Did she do it because she was Jewish or just because she's a wonderful person, or maybe it's a mix? But if you look at white supremacist ideology, their claims are that Jews are the reason why the white race is going to be decimated. It's Jews' fault that immigrants are coming in. It's Jews' fault that white people and immigrants, brown people is what they really mean, are marrying each other. And white people, Nazis, claim it's going to lead to the genocide of the white race. They love to use the word genocide. Here, neo-Nazis caused the greatest genocide in world history. And I guess they think Jews are going to get back by murdering all... No, not by murdering, by mixing. By mixing the races. This is classic Nazi ideology. And it's being spread. It's being spread and encouraged by our president. Not the ideology per se. But when he talks about George Soros helping those caravans get in, you can see how the Pittsburgh killer complained. He said he had to kill the Jews before the Jews committed genocide on his people. His people? White people? That was his ideology. And the president has been asked specifically, to what extent does he believe that what he's done, is leading to some of this domestic terrorism, which I should note is much greater than Islamic terrorism. There are more domestic terrorist incidents now than radical Islamic incidents. And frankly, you know, for those who are offended by the calling of radical Islamic extremism, you could call it radical Christian extremism. Some of these people profess to be Christians. Now, Christians are not terrorists any more than Muslims are terrorists. The vast majority of Christians are peaceful, loving, wonderful people. I know this. I know this. I attended vigils this week where massive numbers of Christians came out to support the Jewish community. This is a perversion of Christianity. I should note that the evangelicals have been very supportive of Donald Trump. But Donald Trump was asked to what extent he might bear some responsibility for these acts by a reporter who really seemed, well, generally concerned. Let's play the audio.
To be honest, like, what scares the crap out of me is that when, if you're saying, enemy of the people, enemy of the people.
God forbid.
I have to fight back. You're
but
right.
But no, but hold on a second. But just think of it. God forbid that, like, somebody, like, you've got fervent supporters. They love you. They listen to you. Enemy of the people. Enemy
of
the people.
They like me more because of that.
They like you more, but what happens if all of a sudden someone gets shot? Someone shoots one of these reporters?
Jim,
is that, but
I,
then,
I
honestly,
fully,
like, I don't think you think we're the enemy of the people, do you?
I don't. But if you gave me false reports, I would say that's not a good thing for our country.
But don't you worry at all? I mean, people, you are like the most powerful man in the world. And if you say that word, enemy, enemy, literally tens of thousands of people go into a stadium to listen to you. And then people go on social media and they get themselves so jazzed up. There's got to be a part of you that's like, damn it, I'm scared that someone is going to take
it
too far.
It's my only form of fighting back. I couldn't be here if I did that.
You won. You have the presidency.
No. But I did this before I won.
So I hope you heard the clip. You have the reporters saying, you're telling enemy of the people, enemy of the people. The press is the enemy of the people. Let's not forget that one of those bombs, or two, were sent to CNN, right? This isn't just an attack on Democrats and Trump critics. It's an attack on the media. Enemy of the people. So here he is using all the code words. The press is dangerous. Jews are dangerous. Blacks are dangerous. Brown people are dangerous. Immigrants are dangerous. Women can falsely accuse men of rape. Who's a straight white male Christian to trust? And the reporter says, hey, don't you worry that these things can be used and someone could be killed. And the president says, well, it's helping me. My first thought to that, of course, was, it's not all about you, Donald. Some of us care more about our country. Some of us think that other people's lives matter. Maybe we need a sign, people other than Donald Trump, their lives matter. Donald Trump says, helping me. And you know what? It is. It's one of the few trustworthy things Donald Trump has said. No question. By promoting racism and hatred and anti-Semitism and xenophobia and homophobia and anti-transgender and misogyny, Donald Trump is making it cool to be a Nazi again. You know, after World War II, it wasn't seen as cool to be a Nazi again. It was back in the 30s, back in the time of Charles Lindbergh. There were lots of American Nazis. They called their movement America First. I wish I were joking. You know that, right? You know where the first America First came from? American Nazis. So Donald Trump is hearkening back to American Nazi ideology. He's using the themes, Jews bringing immigrants to this country, the financier, George Soros. The biggest financiers, by the way, are the Koch brothers. And there's some, like Sheldon Adelson, who's Jewish, who gives more money to Republicans, vast more, almost all of it to Republicans. So, but these themes, these hatreds, this idea that the southern border has to be protected. You know how many immigrants come in America in a year? About 300,000, maybe 1,000 a day. If these immigrants all came at once, and I don't think 7,000 are going to make it walking 1,500 miles. If they do, it would be 7 days. It's not that big a crowd. We're a big country. We have 300 million people. Do you know who comes in much, much greater numbers every single day in America? People who fly in. That's right. More undocumented immigrants come across on airplanes than they do across our southern border. Donald, what wall are you going to do to keep out that flight from London or Paris? Is it going to be 8 miles high, 10 miles high? You're going to build it on top of our beaches? How's that going to work for you? Meanwhile, the president, as I said, he's looking at abandoning the Constitution, getting rid of free speech, encouraging terrorism. Now, we have put in Guantanamo Bay Americans, an American citizen who spent his time in ISIS encouraging people to attack the United States. This American-born radical Islamic cleric, I forgot his name, I could look it up. You probably know who I'm talking about. Alawaki, something like that. I don't remember the name. But he wasn't actually ordering attacks that we know of, but he was inciting people to attack. He was putting stuff on the web. He was encouraging people to hate America and to do attacks. Alawaki, I think that's, I'll find the name. And you know what we did to him? We killed him. All he was doing was inciting terrorist attacks in Yemen, and we dropped a bomb on his head, and he was an American citizen. How is what Alawaki did different from what Donald Trump does every day? How's it different? Trump's influence is much greater. Much greater. Affects far more. Affects hundreds of millions. He just put out an explicitly racist ad that claimed that Democrats want to bring killers in the United States. Hey, for the record, we don't. Yeah, we support immigration, but we're fine with keeping the criminals out. No problem there. They even cite a guy who'd been deported twice who was a murderer. I've always said rather than deport murderers where they can come right back into this country, we should put murderers in jail where they can't come back in and commit murders again. I'm tougher on immigrant murderers than the Republican Party. Because deportation ain't enough. If you're a killer, you need to spend the rest of your life behind bars. Some would argue you should have the death penalty. Deportation isn't strong enough for the killers. Democrats are tougher on immigrant killers than Republicans. But what we don't do is claim that because one horrible human being is of a specific heritage, we're going to ban all people of that heritage. Because if you ever let your mind go there, if you ever turn on Fox News and listen to Laura Ingraham, oh my God, that's an MS-13. Ban all Latinos because a few of them are MS-13. Then it's time to deport white people. Because what do the Pittsburgh killer and the Kentucky killer and the bomber all have in common? They're all white males. Obviously, I don't support deporting white people. But do you see the difference? White people see them as individuals. Oh, don't blame Donald Trump. Don't blame the Republican Party. These are just crazy people. We can't hold every white person responsible for them. Of course we can't. And again, the outpouring of love for the Pittsburgh community, for the Jewish community in America, has been overwhelming. But there are a few folks who are inciting them to violence. Making up lies, vicious lies. I mean, we've had presidents lie about, I don't know, sex with an intern. Lie about the war in Vietnam. We've never had a president lie so consistently, repeatedly, 8 or 9 a day. And so obviously wrong. I mean, Donald Trump says 2 + 2 = 5. He gives lies that are easily provable. That are wrong. He said that there were Middle Easterners in the caravan. There are not. He said George Soros was financing it. He did not. He said that he can change the Constitution by his own whim. No, he can't. We're in a crisis right now. And we do have to fear terrorism. And more than the terrorism that comes from abroad, we have to fear the terrorism created right at home. And it's not just Donald Trump, and it's not just Fox News. It's the Republican Party. Now, I'm not going to tar all Republicans. I'm not going to say all Republicans support Nazis and white nationalists. But how many have spoken out against Donald Trump's explicit racism? There are a few conservatives. I give them credit. People like George Will or Anna Navarro have been eloquent speaking against them. But how many Republican elected officials? Can you name them? Give you a hint. John McCain's dead. Jeff Flake says a couple words. Can you name 10? Can you name 5? To the extent the Republican Party does not distance itself from their president promoting domestic terrorism, racist ideology, and neo-Nazi hatred, they're complicit in it as well. And the only way we and the American people are going to get our country back is to elect Democrats this Tuesday. It's Mark Levine. Call in if you want. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. You might say last week was just an unusual week. The Pittsburgh synagogue massacre, the Kentucky grocery store massacre, one killing Jews, one killing blacks, the bombs sent all across the nation. That was, yeah, it was a hard week last week. That's true. But it was just a couple weeks ago, a week earlier, where Robert Chain was arrested for threatening to murder journalists at the Boston Globe. As he said, quote, "You're the enemy of the people, and we're going to kill every effing one of you." Well, he didn't say effing. Trump is inciting these people. Every one of them. And you could say, well, that's not Trump's fault. Look at the guy that killed the, or didn't kill, shot at the congressman who was a supporter of Bernie Sanders. And that's true. There can be terrorists on the left, just as those on the right. But you know what Bernie Sanders did the day of that shooting? He went to the floor of the Senate and delivered a blistering attack on the man that had shot in his name. And an attack on hate, an attack on violence. And I don't think many people can argue that Bernie Sanders have been fomenting that violence the way Donald Trump talks about paying off people who get into fights or brags about a member of Congress body slamming a reporter. Donald Trump has also cut domestic programs designed to prevent terrorism. He has ended the violent extremist grant program that began by the Obama administration. He just doesn't think that violent white supremacy should be a priority. But here's the truth. Americans today are more likely to be murdered by their fellow Americans than by jihadists. The threat is real, and it is us. And it's the Republican Party and Donald Trump that's causing these people to be so angry. Well, I take it back. They were always angry. There always have been anti-Semitism. There's always been racism. But Trump and Fox News are making it okay. They're making it cool to be a Nazi again. They're bringing them out of the shadows, giving them the AR-15s they need. Okay, they don't hand it to them. They make it legal to buy them. Then they take these weapons of war and they attack. When will Republicans get tough on terrorism? The domestic kind. The kind that we all need to fear. It's Mark Levine signing off.